Greetings, everyone, and welcome to today's program. What is the greatest crisis that arises at the end of the age between Satan, the beast, the false prophet, and the peoples of God, and for that matter, the peoples of all the world? The final conflict centers on a single word that appears over and over in Revelation chapters 13 and 14. 8 times in Revelation 13 and 14, attention is called to worship. It is the crucial word throughout this section of the book of Revelation. The great command in Revelation chapters 13 and 14 is found in Revelation 14:6. And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and to every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, Fear God, give glory to him, for the hour is come. Worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. Yes, we are commanded here to worship God, the one who created the heavens and the earth. On the other hand, worship of the beast and his image is referred to 7 times in Revelation chapters 13 and 14. As this present evil age comes to a close, the great test will center on whom are you going to worship? Worship that is acceptable to God has historically been at the center of man's relationship to God. Cain and Abel were divided over the issue of worship. Cain brought a thank offering, not admitting he was a sinner. Apparently, Cain thought that he was the Messiah that had been promised in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15. Abel, on the other hand, his younger brother, brought the firstlings of his flock, showing that he realized that he was a sinner and that his sins needed to be covered. On Mount Carmel, in the great showdown between Elijah and the priest of Baal, the issue was worship. When Satan tempted Jesus in the desert, the crucial issue was worship, as we find in Matthew chapter 4, verses 8 through 10. Again, the devil took him up into an exceeding high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. And he said unto him, All these things will I give you, if you will fall down and worship me. Then said Jesus unto him, Get you hence, Satan, for it is written, You shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. From Satan's initial rebellion to the present day, he has been on an insatiable quest to break prophecy, to try to prove that the Word of God is not true, and at the same time to become the object of worship. And sadly, millions of people will be deceived, yea, even billions, into worshiping the unholy trio of Satan, the beast, and the false prophet at the end of this age. That period of time of the Great Tribulation, just before we merge into the wonderful world tomorrow, the new age that is to come, the millennial reign of Christ and the saints. Paul warns us that those who do not love the truth will be sent grand delusion that they should believe the lie. What lie? The pseudo-Messiah will feign to be Christ. In other words, the big lie will be that Christ has come, when in effect it is the pseudo-Messiah sitting in the temple of God proclaiming that he is God. Paul writes about this in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. At that period of time, there were people who were sending out letters, some of them as if, even if they were from Paul, saying that Christ had already come, and Paul writes them and lets them know that there are certain things that have to take place before Jesus Christ returns again and before the resurrection. He writes in 2 Thessalonians 2:3, Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, the day that in which we are all gathered together unto him, except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he as God sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So that day has not yet come, but it looks like that events on the world scene are shaping up so that that pseudo-Messiah can come onto the scene, as the nations of the world are scrambling in trying to get every kind of conceivable advantage they can over the other nations. Paul goes on to say, during that period of time, eventually, that wicked one is going to be revealed. In 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 8, and then in verse 9, 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 9, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. Do you love the truth? Is the truth more important to you than anything else? Or are you more apt to obey the traditions of men just because somebody else said it, just because that's what your denomination has always taught, that's what your parents did, or your neighbors do, or anyone else? Or have you opened the pages of the Bible to really know for yourself, what does the Bible really say? He goes on to say, and for this cause, which cause? Because they love not the truth, God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Psalm 119 and verse 172 defines righteousness. All your commandments are righteous. And God himself is righteous, and God obeys his perfect, immutable spiritual law, and so did Jesus Christ when he was here on this earth. And so they have commanded us to obey that immutable spiritual law. On the other hand, the goals of the Antichrist are to control everything: religion, jobs, economics, politics, education, government, the police, military, banks, communications, and entertainment. The goal will be to establish and control a universal monetary system, a universal government, and a unified religion under the Antichrist. Today's technology is tracking the movements of millions of animals using microchips the size of 1/20th of a grain of rice, implanted in the skin with a small needle holding information equivalent to 20,000 pages. Canada has approved it for cattle. The European Community requires all livestock to be implanted with microchips, and in Colorado Springs and other cities of America, microchips are replacing the tags that were normally placed on dogs and cats after they were vaccinated. In a world where cash is eliminated and every financial transaction is done electronically, not only the credit cards can be used, but also your microchip number, retinal readers, voice recognition systems, signature dynamics. These chips don't need batteries. They have a little coil and a pre-programmed number all encapsulated in glass. This can be inserted under your skin with a special hypodermic needle. It won't get infected, and you would hardly know it is there, but scanning devices will know it's there. It would be used to tie into your bank accounts or whatever they want to do with it in the future. They could perfect it so that it can actually be your smart card, or really your credit card. Perhaps you've seen the recent commercial in which these truckers are lost in the desert, and they get a call on the cell phone asking them where they are. And they say that we're lost. And then they say, well, how did you know? She said, because of the tracking number, because of the radio frequency identification card that is there. Amazing. In a world where cash is eliminated and every financial transaction is done electronically, not only the credit cards can be used, but also your microchip number. In 1935, the Social Security program was enacted as a simple retirement system to be funded by payroll contributions. But in 1974, the Senate Finance Committee voted to issue a Social Security card to every child entering the first grade. Time magazine of March the 13th, 1972, page 16, commenting on this, said, such a system would further central enable the government to amass information on citizens and store it in a central computer under a single identification number. Then, in 1989, a law was passed that every child over 2 years of age must have a Social Security number to qualify as a dependent on tax returns. Now, a program has been implemented that when the child is born, when a baby is born, the hospital will automatically apply for the Social Security number. The name of the program is Enumeration at Birth. To enumerate means to assign a number. These technological marvels, however, are not the mark of the beast, but they can be used to help the beast enforce his dictatorial control. The mark of the beast will have a religious, spiritual basis. That is, it is connected with worship. In Revelation 13, verse 15, the Apostle John writes, "And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed." So in the final analysis, their worship is the mark by which they are identified. Those who refuse to worship will be exposed by their refusal to perform the act of idolatrous worship. Those who refuse the mark will face death at the hands of the great false system. The mark of the beast is not a visible writing, just as the seal of God's servants is not done in writing. However, there has to be a way of identifying those who can buy and sell. And those who worship the beast are forced to receive the mark of the beast in order to buy and sell. And that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. That's Revelation 13, verse 17. This may be where computer chips and various high-tech devices play a role in tracking those who worship the beast system. But they are not what causes one to receive the mark of the beast. The cause centers on worship. So what is a mark? In Bible usage, it is virtually synonymous with a sign, and in one or two places used interchangeably. However, there is a difference. A mark is a brand of identification forced on one. People who raise cattle, they oftentimes brand their cattle. They mark them with their brand so that they will know that they belong to them. A sign is also a badge of identity, but one voluntarily accepts it. God does not force you to obey Him. You must choose for yourself, after you've been convicted of something, whether or not you're going to obey God. Whereas the beast system, he forces people to obey Him, but no one can really force you to worship something. Worship has to do with the mind and the spirit. It has to do with your willpower and your mind, your spirit, of who are you going to give your loyalty and allegiance to. I suppose someone could hold you down and put a computer chip in your arm or whatever, but that wouldn't mean that you're worshiping the beast and his system. Christ said that those who worship God must worship Him in spirit and in truth. That's John 4:24. So if you're going to worship God, you have to worship Him in truth. Can anyone really worship God without obeying what God says to do? When we come back for the next segment of our program, we'll see one of the principal signs whereby God identifies His people. The Bible says that God knows those who are His. Does God know you? Are you obeying God? Do you even know that in order to really have a relationship with God and have that identifying sign that you are His, that you have to obey Him? No, the law of God is not done away with. As we'll see in the second segment of our program, that one of the great identifying signs between God and His people is the Sabbath. Can you truly worship God and not obey Him? As we have seen here in the first segment of our program, that the great final crisis between Satan, the beast, the false prophet, and the peoples of God, and for that matter, the peoples of the world, will center on worship. Who are you going to worship? Those who do not worship the beast are killed and forced to receive a mark or a sign. So really what it comes down to is, who are you going to worship? Who are you going to give your loyalty and allegiance to? You need to understand that God's immutable spiritual law stands forever. We have a booklet that will help you understand. The booklet is titled The Ten Commandments. We also have another booklet titled Are We Living in the Last Days? And also we publish a bi-monthly publication, the Good News Magazine, that will help you understand what is going on in the world today and how you can cope with all the various issues of life that people in today's world are facing. To receive all the free literature, all you have to do is call our toll-free number. That toll-free number is 1-888-886-5614. Once again, to receive the Ten Commandments booklet, Are We Living in the Last Days?, and a subscription to the Good News Magazine, all you have to do is call our toll-free number, 1-888-886-5614. Once again, that's 1-888-886-5614. And now back to world news and prophecy. As we have seen in the first segment of our program, the great crisis in the book of Revelation centers on who will you worship and who will you obey? Will you worship God? Will you obey God and keep his commandments? Or will you worship the beast and the beast system? He who seeks to save his life shall lose it. The Sabbath is one of God's great signs, standing more than any other commandment for obedience. It was symbolically in the hand and in the forehead, just as the mark of the beast was in the right hand and in the forehead, as we have seen in the book of Revelation in chapter 13. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 1 and verses 6 through 8, now these are the commandments, and these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart. You shall bind them for a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. Yes, you want the Word of God. It is not some kind of computer chip or anything like that. It is not anything that is necessarily written on the skin. It has to do with what your mind and your heart really are. In Exodus chapter 31 and verse 13, speak you also unto the children of Israel, saying, verily my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Eternal that does sanctify you. He goes on to say in verse 16, Exodus 31, 16, wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant. No, the Sabbath was not just given for the people of Israel. The Sabbath is given for all peoples. Jesus Christ kept the Sabbath. He set us an example that we should walk in his steps. In Revelation 12 and verse 17, we see who Satan really is mad with. And the dragon was mad with a woman, the woman in this case, the church, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So you see, those who are keeping the commandments are not Jews altogether. There may be some Jews who are converted, but it's not just for Israel. It says very clearly that Satan is mad with those who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. These characteristics are echoed in Revelation 14 and verse 12. Here is the patience of the saints. These are what we call New Covenant, New Testament Christians. They are of the Israel of God. They are of all races, kindreds, nations, and tongues, and ethnic groups. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep his commandments and the faith of Jesus. That's Revelation 14 and verse 12. Read it for yourself. In both of these verses, the remnant is made up of people who obey the commandments of God. They hold to the testimony of Jesus. This characterization of the remnant implies that the commandments of God will somehow be an issue between God's faithful people and those who are deceived. But since many of the commandments, such as the prohibition against stealing, are commonly acknowledged, it is wise for us to ask whether Revelation narrows the focus of conflict to one or more commandments in particular. This, in fact, seems to be the case. The first four commandments, the first table of the law, as some call it, are directly concerned with our relationship with God and with worship. It should come as no surprise, therefore, that the unholy trio of Satan, the beast, and the false prophet described in Revelation 13 not only offer a counterfeit of the sign and the seal of God. The first commandment says, you shall have no other gods before me, but the sea beast takes the place of God by receiving worship of himself, as in Revelation 13, verses 4 and 8. The second commandment warns us against the worship of graven images or idols, yet the land beast raises up an image to be worshipped. The third commandment says, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, but the sea beast has the names of blasphemy written all over it. In Revelation 13, you can read about this, verses 5 and 6. The fourth commandment says, remember the Sabbath day. Ancient covenant tablets, contract documents, were stamped in the center with a seal of ownership and authority. Since the Ten Commandments follow the form of ancient covenant tablets, we should not be startled that they have to have a seal of ownership and authority in the center. the Sabbath command. 4, why should you keep the Sabbath? Because it is connected with creation and recognition. It is God who has given you life and breath in the first place. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that in them is. But he rested on the Sabbath. He, God himself, rested on the Sabbath. You can read of this in the first 3 verses of Genesis chapter 2. Therefore the eternal God blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Holy things have God's active presence within them. The above statement is the only place in the Ten Commandments where the basis of God's authority over all the creation is stated. He is the Creator. This concept of seal is important in Revelation as well. The 144,000 are sealed on their foreheads, saying, "Hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads." When God seals one, it is a sign of setting apart and divine protection. We see in Revelation 9:4 that when the first woe is unleashed on the peoples of the earth, the peoples who were sealed in Revelation chapter 7 and verse 3 are protected. As we have noted also, the Sabbath is one of the great signs of the true worshipers of God. Speak you also to the children of Israel, saying, "Verily, my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the eternal, your God, that sanctifies you." Exodus 31, verse 13. The unholy trio, Satan, the beast, the false prophet, offer a counterfeit seal, the mark of the beast. So all 4 of the commandments of the first table of the law come under attack by Satan, the beast, and the false prophet. Clearly, the mark of the beast is an intentional counterfeit of the first table of the law, and it has to do, once again, with worship. A further pointer to the first table of the law can be found in Revelation chapter 14, verses 6 and 7. "And I saw another angel fly in the midst of the heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, to every nation, kindred, tongue, and people, saying with a loud voice, Fear God, give glory to him, for the hour of his judgments is come, and worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of water." These verses offer the same motivations for obedience that can be found in the first table of the law. It also connects the Creator with worship. Worship God who made all of these things. The first motivation for keeping commandments is related to salvation, a very positive motivation. Note the prologue to the Ten Commandments is, "And God spoke all of these words, saying, I am the eternal your God, which have brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me." In effect, God is saying, since I am the one who brought you out of slavery in Egypt, why would you want to serve anyone else? The second motivation is more negative, the motivation of judgment. God reminds them that if they go into idolatry, they will be punished and their sins will be visited on the third and fourth generation of their children. The third motivation is the fourth commandment, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth. This is the motivation of creation. Since I made you, I know what is best for you. Revelation 14, verses 6 and 7 sets these same 3 motivations in the context of the end of the age. The first angel has the eternal gospel, the motivation of salvation. He warns that the hour of judgment is come, and he calls on everyone to worship the Creator. The first angel's message, therefore, contains the same motivation as the first table of the law, that is, to worship God. And this commandment to worship is framed in the context of creation, and just as it is with the fourth commandment. And it is on in the fourth commandment where we are reminded to remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy. This is the day on which we worship. It is therefore logical to conclude that the Sabbath command will be a critical issue in the final crisis at the end of the age. If Satan, the beast, and the false prophet impose Sunday worship, the Sabbath command will be of utmost importance. We know once again that Revelation 14:7 is the only place in the whole section of Revelation chapters 13 and 14 where we find a call to worship the true God. Since true worship versus false worship is a central issue at the end of this age, this verse is the central text of the section, perhaps of the entire book. The true worshipers are called to worship the true God in the context of the fourth commandment. That is, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, because God created the heavens and the earth, and that is the day on which we worship. So perhaps we're being told here that the Sabbath is the crucial issue in the final crisis. In fact, the first record of anyone keeping the Sabbath is in the context of creation. The Creator Himself kept the Sabbath in context with the recreation of the earth for man. Read it in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 3. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it He had rested, kept Sabbath from all the work which God created and made. As a memorial of creation, the Sabbath points continually to God as the object of worship. Obviously, the issue in the final crisis, therefore, is not limited to the Sabbath, but it seems the Sabbath is an integral part of this issue. In the book of Revelation, the great issue at the end is related to the first four commandments, the first table of the law. And the punishment for receiving the mark of the beast is to be burned in Gehenna fire, as it says in Revelation chapter 14, verses 9 through 11. On the other hand, in the Gospel of Matthew, in chapter 25, we see where the nations are gathered together and the sheep and the goats are separated. And here the separation is based on how people treat one another. When you do it for the least one of these, you have done it unto me, Christ says. And those who don't do it receive the same punishment as those who receive the mark of the beast. Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, insomuch as you did it not to one of these, the least of these, you did it not unto me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment. They will be burned up in Gehenna fire, from which there is no resurrection, but the righteous into life eternal. Matthew 25, verses 45 and 46. So when all is said and done, the whole ball of wax, as they say, goes back to the two great commandments. Jesus said, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. The truth is, the two great commandments go hand in glove. They are, in a sense, reciprocals. That is, you can't have one without the other. You can't love God and not love your neighbor. So, a person may perfectly keep the Sabbath, though I doubt that they really can, and yet they don't love their neighbor. How can they say that they love God? So when all is said and done, you have to put the whole table of God together, and the whole spiritual law of God has to go together and has to be obeyed. We should get our marching orders from Matthew 25 as well as from Exodus chapter 20. I leave you today with these words from Revelation chapter 14 and verse 12. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus Christ. Be sure to be tuned to this same station at this time next week for World News and Prophecy. You have been listening to World News and Prophecy. For the free literature offered on this program, you may call our toll-free number. Call for the booklet on the Ten Commandments, Are We Living in the Last Days?, and a subscription to the Good News Magazine. The toll-free number is 1-888-886-5614. Once again, that's 1-888-886-5614. And until next time, this is Donald Ward for World News and Prophecy.